black blood, violence, freaks of nature? Well, then come on down to Captain Spaulding's Museum of Monsters and Madmen. Yeah, see the alligator boy. Ride my famous murder ride. Most of all, don't forget to take home some of my tasty fried chicken. Ha-ha! It just tastes so damn good.
Ah, the doctor is in. Don't scream, don't move. Stay tuned for PMG's Halloween Horror Month. I'm your host, your ghost host with the most, Marcel Delgado. I'll be with you until the end. And with me is Alonso Castillo.
Of course.
As always.
As always.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Pretty Much Geek Podcast Halloween Horror Month. You have been with us two times this month, and we are here for the third. We're a little past the halfway point, and we are here. Last week we talked about Zombieland. We talked about zombies. Today we're talking about Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses.
The zombie man himself.
Yes. And this movie, it's been a while since I've seen it. I think the first time that I watched this was, again, like when we were talking about the last one, was when you were in high school.
Yeah.
Around that time, I think it was funny because just for me in horror, and me and you both have a different upbringing when it comes to horror.
You
grew up with it, always around in you in your house. Whatever, you'd always tell me that. And the few times whenever I would go over to your house, Alonso, you would always have a horror movie on. Or I think it would be like the few times where I would just be like, hey, I can't go watch this movie because my mom wouldn't let me. So I would be like, hey, let me go to Alonso's house. What are you gonna do? Oh, we're gonna probably just play, like, you know, a Halo or something. And then we would land up watching, like, you know, Curse of Chucky or Halloween or something like that. So, you guys, you know, and for the most part, your house was always my gateway into various amounts of things.
And content
of variety. Around high school, I was given a little more leash on life. But I remember at that time point, I didn't have internet. Up until 2009. I grew up without it. I didn't have... I
know.
Yeah.
It's
very funny.
Nothing will ever crack me up like the time I told you about Google Maps, and it blew your mind when you found out you could zoom in and see your house.
See, because the idea was, it makes sense to everyone else, obviously, since granted, this was also, not that it makes it a little bit better, but it was like 2011, it wasn't like a couple of days ago or something like that, all right? It's like almost like a decade ago when this happened, but when I got the internet.
The internet.
I know.
The internet.
And henceforth, I went outside and I found the internet.
But I remember it was one of those things where I just jumped right in. And I had to, like, do this whole, like, discography search of, like, music and film and whatnot. And that's when I first discovered podcasts. And, you know, I started off with, you know, the KOXM radio podcast for Official Xbox Magazine, which got me my video game fix and stuff like that. But in film, that was where I got my fix from another podcast. It was called the Now Playing Podcast. They're still out and about doing their own thing. But they reviewed movies, not much like we do. And I remember they would do a retrospective series for, like, Friday the 13th or Halloween. And one day they decided to do the House of a Thousand Corpses as a duology. Throughout, whenever I would do these entire things, I would have a little ritual of, like, you know, I would go and watch it, and then I would listen to the podcast. This is what I did with this. And I remember I brought it over to your house. I think I rented it from Netflix back. Yes, you could do that back in the day, kids. You could go and rent something
from DVD rentals.
Yeah, you would Netflix. Type in what movie you wanted from Netflix, and then they would send it to you via your mail, and you would pick it up and just put the physical disc into your DVD. You'd also keep it if you said that you sent it to them, and they didn't get it back.
It was lost in the mail. Oh, no.
The reason why I have Gremlins 2. That's another story. And I remember we watched it, and I think you fell asleep halfway through, because we did one of our late nights playing video games all nighters. We were just going to play video games, douse ourselves with, like, Monster and Doritos and whatnot. And we watched House of a Thousand Corpses. You kind of got a little bored of it, I think, or you just knocked out like you usually do.
Yeah, you know. I'm a sleeper.
Yeah. You know, you're a sleeper. I'm a sleeper. You know? Parker used to go to sleep a little bit later than you, but eventually he would knock out, and I would always be the one that with the insomnia who would just be up after everyone. And I'm like, okay, this is my house. This is my place now. There was something about it that just didn't really click with me. There was an energy there, though, and I remember just being captured by it. Like, I couldn't remove my eyes from the scenes. And I didn't really know what to think about it. A couple years later, I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, another one of my favorite movies, favorite horror films. And I love that movie. It's a very gritty and very, like, you know, gruesome. What more can be said about it? Now, coming back and watching House of a Thousand Corpses, it's been a long time since I've seen it. We have here is an obvious love letter to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Hills Have Eyes, and a bunch of other things regardless.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I love about Rob Zombie. Say what you will about him as a director, because the man has done many, many, many movies and video projects and whatnot. He just makes stuff, but he has a vision as a director, and I finding your voice and making sure that you put your work and your own stamp on something is something that I admire and I strive to do. So seeing someone who has such a unique touch to their work is something admirable for me. That I think so, and I think you agree too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, you know, what's really interesting is, like, in kind of like you going back to saying that, but, like, you know, like the whole internet thing. I was exposed to horror actually really young. I mean, I tell you stories about, like, when I was really young, my aunt used to take me to go see, like, I think one of the first horror movies I ever saw was either anywhere from the ages of 3 to 5 years old, and my aunt took me to go see a Chucky movie in theaters, or some horror movie. I don't remember which one it was, but I just remember going to a theater and watching a horror movie with my aunt, like, who was a high schooler or a teenager at the time. She took me because, you know, whatever. And, you know, it was the 90s, so people were a little bit more leeway when it came to kids coming to watch these traumatic movies, but... You know, like, she would take me in.
You can't show this to children in 2019. Yeah, come on.
I remember watching, like, being at my grandma's house, and they would have, like, you know, the Curse of Chucky just on the TV. And, like, I would be sitting there watching, or Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, it was always kind of those things where, like, they would tell us to kind of, like, shoo. But, like, if we stood there or sat down and watched it, nobody would really bat an eye. Everyone was like, whatever. And so my sister, being, you know, a handful of years older than me, there was, like, this whole series of when the Saw franchise came out of, like, which movies can be more gruesome. So, like, there was, like, The Hills Have Eyes, Hostel. And there was, like, a big trend of trying to find, like, these super scary movies that aren't allowed in theaters. And I remember I was super into that. Like, there was, like, I forget what the movie was called, but it was a movie about, like, a whole family that, like, ate people and kept them in cages. And it was, like, one of those really, like, you know, like...
That was The Hills Have Eyes.
No. It's a different movie. It was, like, an organized-looking family. They were, like, an ordinary family with, like, a dark secret. Mm. And obviously they were, like, you know, these crazy psychotic cannibals or whatever. But anyways, there's a multitude of these films, like, some low budget, some, like, they never came out in theaters, but they would always go straight to DVD and be like, so terrifying, you can't show it in theaters. You know, one of those, like, catchy things. Because that's back when we had DVD rentals. You'd walk into a store.
Yeah, you walk into the Blockbuster and you would see the little shock value, the annotations on the boxes when you could physically turn it around and be like, am I going to get this?
Yeah, and you know, that's how I discovered a lot of, like, quote unquote horror movies, like Shaun of the Dead, June O, like the original Grudge, like all these other films. I would literally just walk around and just kind of looking at films and kind of trying to understand what they were. And, you know, being not like a baby, but being a kid and just kind of like always loving movies because my grandfather loved movies, just like really kind of culminated. But all that being said, like, the reason horror has always been a big part of my life. And then when I saw this movie, which I believe you introduced into my life, when the first time I saw House of a Thousand Corpses, and rewatching it now, it still holds the same memories that I had when I was younger.
I think I left the Blu-ray over at your house, and because you wanted, like, I want to finish it or something like that, and then you watched it the next day or something like that.
Yeah, like, probably what it was, but I always remember this film, and even to this day, being a movie that just did everything that I felt like that whole, like, over the top, very creepy, very disturbing imagery, gruesome, gory, like, and very hyper stylized as well, but just did all those elements so well. And that's the reason I've always loved House of a Thousand Corpses. That's the reason I've always thought, like, this is probably Rob Zombie's best movie, because to me, this maybe just left the biggest impact on me when it comes to what horror is. Like, when I think of, like, just a horror movie, like, what's going to horrify you? Because there's, like, body horror. It's, you know, also, like, just very, very creepy. There's all these disgusting elements to it. And then the psychoticness of, like, everybody. Even how crazy the women act. And it's just, there's so much of this, like, you just know there's all this subtextual craziness to it. And, like, chaos. And it's terrifying because you don't know what's going to happen next. And I love that about this movie because, kind of like you were saying, it's a love letter to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But I feel like it takes so many elements from all the, that, like, horror stuff that was coming at the same time. And, like, culminated into this movie. And
yeah, because the movie itself, it's based in the 70s. If that isn't enough, just make its own statement of it. Yeah, no, it's very much a personal love letter to him, because Zombie himself, a lot of his I haven't been, not that I'm not a fan of the man, but like I like one or two of his songs or something. I love some of the songs off of this soundtrack, which he scored, but I know that he's always had his foot in horror, and I respect that. I respect the fact that there is an unabashed love over horror, Halloween, generally everything that incorporates it. Because you can tell when someone, whether it's be a director or someone that makes something and makes art, they are into something and they genuinely, like, they're not like bullshitting it. No, I'm just passionate about this and I'm not going to be afraid of it. You can see it also with whether it be just in the set design, the costuming, the makeup, everything about it, even down to the damn Blu-ray itself. Like, there's so many little details. There's like a little video game, like that's like a little flash video game on there where you're just playing and enjoying yourself as like a little you're playing the sheriff trying to run around saving the victims and all like that. But it's just like little just fun things that are just like incorporated, and it just comes from a place of love, and that's something that is incorporated throughout this entire thing. And it's funny that as the origins of this entire thing comes from a horror house. And the funny thing about it is that Zombie worked on since we live in California, we live near LA, a Halloween Horror Nights is a general thing that every year we get invited to it once or twice, either by one or two people. But it's expensive, and you know, we're busy. At least I am every year, and I've always told myself, I'm going to go this year. Never do. Land up going to Knott's Berry Farm and regretting it a little bit afterwards. But it's still fun. And having worked on, I remember one year I almost worked at one of those Halloween, it was one of the little independently owned haunted houses. It was called Sinister Point. It's up in Brea. I saw like all of the details inside of it, like what happens when the lights are on. And you see all of, like, the traps and all that. And then I remember I went the day afterwards when they were actually open for business. I remember just seeing all of the craft that went into it. And when it's put into place, it's an interactive theater experience, I feel. That's what these things are.
Yeah.
Rob Zombie worked at one of the, back in the day before they had Halloween Horror Nights. And it was just, they would have one or two specific little, like, mazes around the Universal Hollywood backlot. He created one of the best ones at the time, and he was working along with Bill Moseley, who plays Otis in the film, and he got an award for it. And through his work, he also he had an idea for House of a Thousand Corpses. He wrote up a treatment for it, wrote up a script, and basically got it greenlit. And through that, we have this, and you can see a lot of that at play in when you watch the film, and you're going to, like, whether you're at Captain Spaulding's, and there's almost like this carnival-esque, like, frantic mayhem throughout the entire,
yeah,
and so it's, you see a lot of those original concepts still at play here.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the reasons why, like I said, this movie is so great, because it takes all those elements and then really runs with them. Like, the whole intro of the movie when they're going through the carnival rides and showing them all these different murderers and serial killers and creating these different mythos between all these, like, you know, killers, and how they almost incite different fears in all of us. You know, like when he gets really creepy and he's like, oh, he liked to play with the women's genitals after they died. And it's like, look, you know, approaching the women and trying to make them feel really uncomfortable. And on top of that, you know, really scared. That itself, like you said, being it like a haunted house, where a haunted house can have, you know, I mean, I'm afraid of spiders. I remember actually, I think I went with you to Sinister Point. And there was a point where we had to reach in instead of a box saw tarantulas. And I'm terrified of spiders. But I was the one that actually reached in because it's also one of those things where, you know, the playing with fear is fun. You know, I've always enjoyed it. So even though I'm afraid of spiders and they have like this hole where you have to reach in and grab like pull a key or grab a key or something, I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the one that grabs the key because, you know, I'm the one afraid of this. So I might as well be the one to do it. And so like with this movie, I feel like the things that happen to all the characters, including even just the ride itself, really set up all the elements of fear that you're about to go through, whether you're religious or not religious, or you have a fear of like death, or, you know, whatever your fear individually may be. I feel like there's something in this movie that will definitely get to you.
I mean, for me, what gets to me more than anything is that this feels like a rogues gallery of characters and concepts all within Zombie's mind, all at play. And it's, you can see which ones are the ones that stood out the most to me, which are Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding, Sherry Moon Zombie as Baby, and Bill Moseley as Otis. But upon those three main characters, which we'll get into them too, because they're the three shining stars and they spin off their own trilogy, you have a vast variety of characters that are either heavily inspired by, like I said, the two main ones, which being like Hills of Ice and Texas Chainsaw. But there's just so much lore at play here, and there's so much madness going on, whether it be from having Tiny, which is essentially their Leatherface, and just like the way he acts around, and the little wolf and the Mother Firefly, and just all Dr. Satan, and all of these characters at work at play. It's like this is a sect of you going out on the road and getting stuck somewhere and getting a pop tire, or you blow a gasket, or something happens with your car and you're stuck in the middle of nowhere. I know if you go up to Riverside, a friend of mine, she got stuck in the middle of Riverside at one point, and it was like she was nearing a certain point where it's just dirt road, and it looks a little bit like this. it's just those little patches of areas where you just do not want to get stopped, and it's creepy. And this is delving into it and saying, yeah, this is, oh, your worst fear? Yeah, this is what happened. This is the American nightmare of what can possibly happen.
Yeah, and that's what's so cool, because, I mean, we have just a few minutes with all these characters, and they're all so individually crafted so well that, like, they're all memorable. The first time I saw Sid Haig on screen in his clown makeup, I almost felt like, where have I seen him before? I feel like, has he been in his own movie? I just remember feeling like there was this layer of, like, recognition of him, because he was just so creepy and distinguished. So, like, he was just so indistinguishable for who he was the first time I saw him that I felt like there's no way I'm this attracted to this character and think he looks so cool without at least knowing him from somewhere. And I never did. And so, you know, kudos to Rob Zombie for creating these characters that literally stick in your mind. And obviously people wanted to see more of them, and we did by having a trilogy out of them.
Yeah, the trilogy is it's a very off trilogy in the sense of the stylization of it, because it's... I can only speak for two of the movies. I haven't seen Three from Hell, which just came out recently, but I did see Devil's Rejects, and it's interesting because this movie is insanely stylized. It's unabashedly, it is one of the most stylized films I've ever seen. Put probably Ang Lee's Hulk up there too, is with like just a lot of the side shots and whatnot, and moving a lot of the transitions. Like just the 16mm shots of film, which Zombie shot at his own house, with the actors being placed sporadically throughout the film. There's a lot going on. The movie itself has its very own personality on it, but it was panned insanely when it came out. And to a degree, I understand why. I get why. It's one of those things where before the podcast, we were talking about how when we were watching the movie, because we had the movie on right now, as we usually do whenever we shoot a podcast, these are general things that turns a lot of people off. But that being said, there's a charm to it. It doesn't always work for me sometimes. I feel that the little segments of just footage being placed throughout it, whether it be like documentary footage, it works in some aspects, like when they're going through Spaulding's maze in the beginning of the movie. I think that works really well. There's even some other parts where like they just show like a little of what Otis is doing upstairs, and I think it works fantastically, and it adds a bit of just manicness to to it. But I think like when you get into like some of the stuff with like, you know, when you see like just almost like audition tapes, it feels.
And baby's like dancing.
Yeah, baby's dancing around, doing her thing. It takes away from the tension for me. But that being said, the movie has its own style.
Yeah, like,
and yeah.
Like to me, see, I've always liked, I did like the 16mm film. Not to get too grim. I've been on the internet for a long time, and you've been on the internet for a fairly amount of time now. And we both have seen a wide range of what the internet has to offer, from the great to the horrible.
Thank you, 4chan and Live Leak.
And so, because of that, you know, there have been instances where I've seen, I guess you would say, more real, just real things, and how they are filmed poorly. You know, when they're filmed poorly and they have this sort of ugly, obviously they're not filmmakers, so these horrible, horrible videos of, like, you know, people legitimately getting murdered or something getting horrible happening to them. And I feel like Rob Zombie really captures that manic craziness perfectly, because I've also seen like real authentic videos of people like that, and because of that reason I feel like it kind of works for me, because, you know, there's certain like people on the internet that will literally, unfortunately, because it's really actually a tragic thing, they'll, you know, like, I don't want to say vlog, but volumize their craziness, you know, from like maybe murdering someone to what they do after, or even clips of themselves. And these, you know, these clips exist everywhere on the internet. It's not very difficult to find them. But when I have seen some of these clips, like, for example, like baby dancing, like, I've seen creepy clips of just people that I knew had just committed a murder just standing around and not doing anything, not necessarily dancing, but just not doing anything. They just like sit there, and it's terrifying, because even though I know they're not doing anything evil or crazy at that point, the fact that I knew that what they had done or what they're going to do, as this is all leading towards what they did, is all very, very creepy to me. So I feel like, even though I can definitely understand how that breaks the tension, to me, it creates this a little bit level of more realism, at least for me, you know, like, it creates a little bit more of like, crazy isn't just all the act of murdering, but it's also the elements of what you do when you're not just thinking of that, you know?
I mean, I don't know if I want to rephrase myself, but I said I think in that aspect it works, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
I just feel like for in placement of the movie that we're the main feature that we're showing, I don't think it works all the time in comparison with that, to like heighten the rest of the film.
Yeah.
But on its own standalone, it does the job. And I think it does it perfectly of capturing that just franticness. It's also, again, homaging Texas Chainsaw when they would show some of the clips from behind of after the scenes and what happens from the perspective of the law and whatnot. And you've seen it done before in the past from my other older horror films. It has a very real sense of madness to it, in the sense that it does seem real. And you get that regardless in all the other characters, and so at that, to the point where it's like, this is how crazy people act.
Yeah.
There is an authenticity to how Sherry Moon is portraying Baby, and that it's like, you're not really sure if this is how the actress is off screen, which it's not, but they're committed. Everyone on screen is committed to the role that they're playing and the character, to the point where they're that believable, which in that aspect, I think they do a fantastic job of just, Zombie had a vision, he laid it out to them, and they executed it as well as they could.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that Zombie even said that it wasn't supposed to be corny when they started shooting it. It was going to be more of a horror, like, just like, I'm assuming more so like Texas Chainsaw, in that it was like supposed to be taken grim and seriously. But as they kept on shooting, and they sort of improvisation happens sometimes when you shoot, they landed up just running with that idea.
And you can tell, I mean, there are definitely elements of this that you definitely want to take serious, because a lot of what this movie does, I think, really well is put you in the situation of the victims and make you feel like, oh man, what would I do? And just being so helpless, like just seeing these people and knowing that they're so helpless. And it's weird because I feel like it kind of taps into what everybody's sadistic side, where you almost kind of want to see what they're going to do to them. But at the same time, you're also like, oh my God, it sucks to be them, because they're just stuck in this situation. There's no way they're going to get out. And like, it's like, I don't know what I would do. You know what I mean? Like, if I was there, oh man.
The best horror movies, you either side with the killers or the victims. You have to side with someone. The worst ones are the ones where you don't give a shit and you're just like, yeah, okay, it was whatever. Get me out of here. I don't want to watch this movie.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's so much character given our family of the deranged that we have to deal with here that you kind of want. I'm not going to say I side with them, but I'm going to be in the room with my popcorn and I'm going to be like, yeah. Oh, no, don't do that. No, don't chop off his
legs
and make him into a fish man. Oh, no, please don't do that. Like, it's. You know, but I also like, girl, get the fuck out of there. Like, chill. So I definitely agree in that aspect. So on that note, we're going to take a little bit of a break right now. You're going to hear a little bit from us, but we'll be back to talk more about House of 1,000 Corpses in just a few moments. See you then.
Seems to me you're just plain scared.
Yes. Yeah, I am. I met this six-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
Welcome to In Hindsight, where we take a look back at films both classic and contemporary, regardless of nostalgia, but all with love. This is Marcel Delgado, and today we delve into one of my favorite horror films of all time, Halloween. What if evil were to take a shape? Would it be something we would see coming? The beautiful lie is that it rarely is. Carpenter's classic has always had an unsettling organic feel to it. Michael Myers isn't a demon in your dreams or a zombie from a lake. He's always existed in our towns, our streets, and in some cases, our very homes. The concept of the serial killer has always fascinated humanity, which is why I have always found Michael to be the most effective in terrifying audiences. Before the franchise became a mess, what we had here was a foundation that made the slasher genre. By all means, this was supposed to be an indie horror film, but the attention to craft here is what set it apart. Countless shots and scenes here depict the unease and anxiety we have of the boogeyman of suburbia, why we lock our doors, and make sure we turn around when we hear a noise while walking home. What made Michael terrifying was that you saw him coming. He doesn't chase you because he knows all hope is lost, or has evolved since 1979. However, Halloween remains a template to go back to and how to design it, and in hindsight, remains as the purest representation of evil in our daily lives.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
In Hindsight is part of the Pretty Much Geek Network, available on YouTube, Instagram, iTunes, Podomatic, and all social media.
Welcome to the second segment of the podcast, where we're going to be talking about more of the characters, more of the legacy of House of 1,000 Corpses. And speaking of legacy, every single person, there are a lot of different actors and character actors in this film that landed up doing various different things. We have Dwight himself, Rainn Wilson, in the movie, which threw me off when I first watched it. But I remember, I think at that point too, I was also watching The Office for the first time. We also have Mr. Chris Hardwick, Mr. Talking Dead himself, in a very confusing...
Mr. Me Too.
Yeah, Mr. Me Too.
Mr. Me Too.
Mr. Me Too.
Mr. Me Too.
Okay. Yeah, the minute I saw on the in the credits it said Chris Hardwick, I'm like, oh, what the fuck? No, it has to be some other Chris Hardwick. And I looked it up. Nope, it's him.
Yeah.
Playing as one of our two strong leading men.
Well, strong in
it's strong in many ways. Strong in character, strong in personality, strong in extraness of performance.
Extracurricular. So Chris Hardwick being in this, I mean, it was really interesting. Obviously, he's a lot younger. He's, you know, he hasn't made anything debut. I don't even know if he was anything, honestly, before this that was significant. But this definitely at least put a lot of people on the map. You know, it definitely showed a lot of who... You know, like Dwight. I mean, Dwight's on this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying because of this he got The Office, but I'm sure this must have helped. You know what I mean? Because even though this was commercially panned, with time grew, you know, a real big, strong cult following. So I'm sure that cult following must have definitely helped him up. And he wasn't bad, you know. And same thing with Chris Hardwick. I don't know how much Chris Hardwick has done before this, but I'm sure being in a Rob Zombie movie must have helped. And, you know, this movie did well enough to where it warranted a sequel. You know, so I'm sure the studio must have saw something in these characters, in him, and all the other people that worked on it. So
we also have Walton Goggins in here playing his usual cowboy man of the law.
Which is so interesting how much work that guy gets, because he's literally typecasted as a cop or a lawman or some sort of sheriff. A
marshal or
like every time, and it's because of his accent. But it's also just like how well he does. Like every single role, I've never seen him play a cowboy and be bad. Like, no, you know, he's literally so good at it. Yeah, he's so good at it. And every time I see him in it, for the moment that I do see him, I'm always like, oh, look, it's the cowboy guy. But then I'm like, all right.
Yeah, it's Chris Mannix.
Yeah, I'm just like, all right. Like, and then I just lose myself in whatever character he is. It's just like whenever I would see the badass Latina, she was always the cop in every single movie. What's her name? You know what I'm talking about? Michelle Rodriguez. Michelle Rodriguez is always a cop in every movie she's in. And I'm just like, oh, it's the Mexican girl, Michelle Rodriguez, as a cop again. Or a SWAT, or an officer, or a Marine, or some, you know, something badass. Because, you know, she just plays that character and it's cool. But
getting more into the other members of the Firefly clan, especially their... one of the main actresses. Let's get into Sherry Moon a little bit right now, because she's one of the main characters that makes this movie.
She's hot.
Yeah, you know, Sherry, like I said, I remember watching this in high school, and I was like, oh shit, okay, all right. Another reason why I can't not stop watching this movie. There is a insanity to a baby that is... Again, like just like Otis, and just like most other characters, is very painstakingly real.
Oh yeah,
and I feel very much. It's more. I feel more so than anything. This is how Harley Quinn would be if we took away, you know, the comic bookiness of it, of the character, like just like a crazy, psychotic serial killer that just happens to be an attractive ass woman.
And yeah, but see, that's what makes her so interesting, is because there's something about her that feels so instinctual. She feels like almost just like somebody that's been depleted of any, you know, like,
your family is raising you like this. I mean,
like, but she's just like depleted, because she still has emotions and it's obvious, but she's just depleted of all compassion and empathy. And she's just kind of like looking to get her fix in whatever way that has comes.
Oh, she's a baby. That's why they call her baby, because she's like a little. There's several mental screws loose, if not nothing being carrying it, to the point where it's like that. Everything's playtime. These are not people. They are toys. They are her little things to play with and kill and maim and scalp and whatnot.
Yeah, and that's why it's so great, because. Yet again, there's something so just unhinged about her,
right.
And the way she plays it is so phenomenal. I mean, and that's why where I'm telling you, like, it makes it feel so real, because you don't, like, you know they're gonna die, or I don't know, maybe they're gonna die, maybe they're just gonna get their arms chopped off because they think it's funny, like, you know, like, I don't know. And because I don't know the fate of the characters, and I don't know how severe and what mannerisms they're gonna do the things they do, because a lot of the time I think they try to show, you know, like serial killers as like they're doing this for like an unwanted, unhappy pleasure. But these people are genuinely having a good ass time murdering all these people. And that's what I think makes it so sadistic, because most of the time when we see serial killers, they're always so calculated and smart. And it's all about like, you know, this cat and mouse game, and the actual kills what satisfies them. But in this factor, it's more like the journey is the fun. The torturing, the maiming, all that's the fun. And the kill itself, it's like, oh, what happens? But it's crazy. Crazy.
Whether or not be me watching, just having finished season one of Mindhunter. But I there is something that has always, we always know this about of our culture, is that just we fanaticize serial killers and we immortalize them into this iconography for us, where we want to know what makes them tick, what makes them, and we're just interested by them. And you're saying it there, it's like there are some serial killers that we've had where they actually are very meticulous on how they do things and how they and everything's calculated and like a finely tuned watch. But you get like this, where this is just a backwoods manic nightmare house, and it is insane, and it's insanity. And that's why I whether it be when we first get to like the front porch step of the Firefly house, and we see all the dolls all cultivating the door and whatnot, which is like that's a real thing. That is, there is a doll island that exists I think it's somewhere in South America, where there's just a dozens and dozens and dozens of old baby dolls that are just strung up on trees and branches and cover like the waters, and no one knows where they came from or what they came from. It's just like there's a lot of these little creepy tidbits and all that are all like, it's almost like as I would say, like, the Firefly house is horror, is a house of horrors, and it is horror personified into one specific ground. You also get that in through Otis, the character of Otis by Bill Moseley, and whereas you don't know if certain characters, like you're saying, are going to make it or not, if someone's in a room with Otis, they're going to die.
Oh, yeah.
There is...
There's no doubt about that.
Mosley's performance is... You think it... And there is a little bit of a calculationness to it, where you think that, you know, he knows what he's doing to a degree, but similar to the Joker, like a dog chasing cars, he doesn't know what he's going to do when he's going to get one, but he's going to definitely do something to it. And I find that fascinating. It's a very simple performance in that regards, to where it's very calm and at times, but then it can frantically jump at any moment. Yeah. Not unlike a dog.
Yeah, and everybody kind of kills differently in the movie, you know. Some people are more manic, and it's almost like as they start to do all this killing and chopping, they get excited, so they go faster, and they go more manic, and they go more crazy. Others, you know, like, are a little bit more calculated and slower, and sometimes it just depends on their mood. And so, like, it's so interesting, like I said, not knowing what our characters want, you know, because... When we see Baby, I mean, she basically wants to fuck Dwight, you know? Like, she definitely wants to bang him, like, right away. But then, you know, she can't get that. And, you know, things escalate after the whole play that goes on. And... Well,
I think more than anything, I don't think she wants to fuck him. I think she's using her sexuality to lure in people. That's more, it's part of the bait.
But I also think, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think she did want to slam the dude and then maybe kill him after, you know? I don't know. That's what makes me so terrified of these characters, because... You know, obviously, you could tell that she just wants, you said, it's like playtime for her, right? And her playtime, I think, can range from, like, murdering people to just being sexually charged, to, you know, because there's definitely a sexual tension thing that she wanted from him, or at least I felt. But then I do believe that it was both a ploy, but also something she could use, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it was a multi-layer thing.
Going into one of the other of the trinity of killers in this film, even though he has the least amount of screen time, I feel, in this movie. But when you think of House of a Thousand Corpses and you think of this movie and just the franchise as a whole, he is the poster boy for it. And that would go with the late Sid Haig, which recently he passed away, and sadly.
Yeah.
But his performance as Captain Spaulding is iconic. And I don't really want to use... That word is thrown around a lot. I think I've thrown around... That word is thrown around a lot. And it very rarely does it actually hold merit. But in this case, it works perfectly. I'm not really sure what's in the chicken. I don't know exactly what... I also get like the aspect of, like, you know what? There's this ploy that's being created to where it's a roadside attraction. And then you're going to get some chicken. Do we know where the chicken's coming from? Don't really know, but his character is very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's literally like spinning a wheel with all these characters, because you don't know what you're going to get. Like, I'm sure there's people that just drive by and go to the convenience store and then just go on their merry way. And then there's other people that are just unfortunately unlucky. They get caught right by the Dr. Satan's tree, you know? So... That's, I think, what makes it so terrifying, because you don't know if it were to be you, if you're next, if you're the chosen one. And that element of randomness is so terrifying. You know, the unknown is, like, one of the scariest things in all aspects of life, whether it be leaving a job for a new job or, you know, going into the ocean and having the unknown literally under your feet. The unknown has always been a big fear for most people. And that's actually, I think, a fear that resonates with everybody. And that's where I think these characters do that so well, is the unknown of what they're gonna do is honestly terrifying. And Sid Haig's portrayal of the character, how he seems semi-normal when he's talking to the officers, obviously there's something unhinged about him, but he's semi-normal when he talks to the officers, but then at the same time he has this overplaying character, and it's almost like you don't know where his mind's at, and you don't know where it's gonna be, and that, and I love that. I love that about all this, and that's why I think Rob Zombie's direction and everything that he put together in this film was so precisely done, because he literally wanted everybody, I think, to feel that way, feel this level of unhingedness to them.
Seeing as this was his first directorial debut for a film, the man's done a quiet amount since this. Some of them have been okay. Not some of them have been good. Some of them have been great, even. But some of them have been really bad.
Yeah.
And I don't really, I don't want to call at this point, and that's why how I get with sometimes with reviewing things now, and what reviewing film or reviewing art, I feel. There's a lot of process that goes into it, and at the end of the day, whatever you make is personal for yourself. But as a consumer, which we are also, you get stuff like House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects and the first Halloween, which I all love and I'm happy to own, and I will watch every October. But then you get Lords of Salem, and you also get some of his other films that he's made. What's your take on Zombie as a director?
Zombie as a director, as an artist, because, you know, like, I view Zombie as a legit artist. You know, he's kind of, you know, obviously he's a weirdo, but he definitely has a vision, like you said, and I think I completely agree with you when you say that I respect him for having a vision and being very forward and honest with it. You know, there is an earnestness to this movie and all of his films. He doesn't try to ever, I feel like, literally, I think if you were to go up to Rob Zombie and be like, hey, who's your target audience? He'd be like, I don't know, I'm just making stuff I want to see. And honestly, I could definitely respect the man that's doing that, because not many directors can. They usually have to, you know, appease somebody in one way or another. But with him as a director, I don't know if it's necessarily, like, if it's his writing or maybe his goals or what it is, but some movies can just be so... I don't know where he was going with it. And the one movie I could definitely speak of from that is Lords of Salem. Lords of Salem, to me, it's not even that it's a bad movie in the sense that, like, you know, it's shot bad, I guess, but the movie just is so unconstructively nonsensical that I just, like, it's a bad movie, you know what I mean? And to me, I think maybe Rob Zombie was going for symbolism and, you know, this and that, and by all means, to him, it might mean a lot. But for me, and I think for a majority of the people that I've watched his movies, that movie did not mean jack shit, you know. And so, like I said, there's elements of him where, as a director, I respect him, but I don't love all his work. I think depending on, you know, we're really kind of related to this, or unrelated to this, but just directors, speaking about directors, it's like M. Night Shyamalan. I love M. Night Shyamalan. I love him to death. Has he made horrible stuff? Oh, yeah. But has he made great things? Oh, yeah. And so... there's always, like, for me, there's always this level of curiosity of, like, what are they going to do next? And am I excited to see what they're going to be making? And honestly, with Rob Zombie, I am. Just like M. Night Shyamalan. I always root for that guy. And whenever Rob Zombie's about to come out with a film, I root for that movie, too. I hope it's great because I love his style and his artwork. And I really hope to see that something that he does well, which is creating these worlds and these characters, but just in a manner that's, I guess, consumable for not just me, but, like, a mass, you know, group of people.
And it's when, and in that itself is where you get to deal with the compromising, and what are you compromising yourself as an artist to make yourself, make your stuff a little bit more palatable for a wider audience. Because and that's one of the things, like, I feel like this film is probably one of his, it's the best compromise, I feel, second best in my opinion, to getting full manic zombie, because I feel like Zombie's style is of madness, just similar to, like, the Fireflies. It's like you don't know if what you're gonna get when you put your hand in that dark hole. Are you gonna get stung? Are you gonna get bit? Is something gonna be there? Or are you gonna get, like, a little, is a tongue gonna lick you? You're not exactly sure what it is. I feel with some of his later movies, like, and this is what happened, I feel, because after this one we got Devil's Rejects, which felt totally different.
Oh yeah,
in comparison, it felt very much like a Hollywood. It felt very contemporary in the regard that it just felt like, yes, this is just a gritty, very well shot, very well done film. And I like it. I enjoy it. But you lose a little bit of that zombie personality there. It's there in some semblance, but it's...
yeah, like, it's there more in the characters and not so much in the world. While in this movie, House of a Thousand Corpses, the world itself feels like the madness of mind of Rob Zombie. Yes. Well, in Devil's Rejects, it's more like the world sort of having to deal with the madness of these characters. So it's a little bit flipped, and that's why it loses a bit of that personality. Yeah.
And you get a lot of that, too, also with Halloween. I love his first Halloween. I still love the original as much as anyone else does, but I am one of the people that says that Halloween is one of the best rebooted film or remakes of a movie, where it's like they're making something new, they're grabbing from the old, but they're making something fresh at the same time, and it's very hard to kind of grab that, and at the same time it'll make homage to the original as well and give respect for it. Then you get Halloween 2, and I feel that is when we hit a dipping point where it's like he's done his dues, he's given as much as he wants. That franticness that you got from, I never watched Lord of Salem, I watched bits of it. But from what I heard, it is very similar to Halloween 2, which Halloween 2 is a very all-over-the-place, frantic mess in both editing, direction, writing, and overall, my mind felt numb. and I could see how there are aspects of this movie of House of a Thousand Corpses where it could be construed as that. But I feel like regardless of how maddening things get, there's always a direction where it's going. Like, at the end, this is one of my favorite parts of the film, is nearing the climax where we get the descent into the catacombs of Dr. Satan's lab in hell. And this is one thing that I want to discuss, because we haven't brought it up yet. The set and costume designs in this film is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And that comes from the... How this movie was originally supposed to be, and it's conceived as a horror house.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all that experience, I'm sure, of working on, like, you know, haunted mazes and all that Rob Zombie was working on, and just being, you know, surrounded by all those creepy elements. That's the reason why I think even in Lords of Salem, like, the set pieces and set designs are all beautifully done. I mean, you know, the guy, like I said, he's got a strong. He's an artist. Like, he really is an artist. He's got a vision. He's got a good, like, eye. It's just the fact that I feel like I think what he wants to emote, he doesn't know how to restrain himself. And I think that's also, like, what made House of a Thousand Corpses such a well-made movie, is I think he was maybe listening to people a little more, because it was his, you know, directorial debut. So he was a little bit more reserved as a director, and I think, you know, wanted to kind of get as much help and advice from people probably around him. So that'll probably help influence how and why this movie came out the way it did. And then other movies like Lords of Salem, he had, I don't want to say a lot more free reign, but it's like as he progressed, he continued to get more and more sort of, I guess you would say, creative liberties, you know, and definitely being comfortable in his own suit. And like after Lords of Salem, for example, which I think Halloween came out after Lords of Salem, like I said, I think, you know, bad movie, but I think maybe what people respected about him is that he was not afraid and was very bold in telling his stories and his narratives and his own vision. And I think that's why when he got Halloween, they're like, you know what, like, this guy might not be very, you know, contemporary, but at least when he has a vision, he executes it really well.
And I feel like for that battle between, like, having to deal with, like, producers and a studio it's a fear that I have. I know that you do as well, but I vocalize it with you a lot. It's something that, you know, going in there and going into this business and working and getting involved in it. There's compromises that need to happen, and this movie had tons of it. The movie was shot in 2000, but Universal shelved it and didn't want it to be released because they thought it was going to get an NC-17 rating. Eventually, Zombie got the rights back around and sold it to Lionsgate, and it was released in 2003. But even onto that, on top of itself, they also had to cut it because there was they had to cut it down to get so it wouldn't get an NC-17 and it would get an R rating. A lot of that has not been released. There was tons and tons of footage that were shot to make it this a lot more heavy-handed, a lot more over the top, and a lot more gory, which I would love to see that as, like, deleted scenes. I think the film's perfect the way it is.
Yeah, and I think it was probably, like, that studio interference, I guess you would say. And like I said, it was his directorial debut, so he felt like he had to listen to people a lot more. With all that, like, I guess maybe secondhand on the film, you know, the secondhand on the wheel, it had, he, you know, he had a kind of maybe, I guess, compress that madness that he didn't compress in Lords of Salem. He just let it all go. But in this one, he had to compress it. And that's what I think made it so good, because the madness feels so meticulously, I guess, crafted. And it makes sense because they cut so much out of it, you know, like that he only had to keep the best of the best and make sure that whatever was kept would only contribute to pushing our characters and all the elements of madness forward. My favorite thing, I think, out of all of this, and when it comes to Rob Zombie, especially House of a Thousand Corpses, is how, when I think of Halloween, when I think of horror, honestly, this movie is just such a perfect, like, fit. Because, you know, whenever I see, like, a movie and they're watching, like, a horror movie, you know, there's always, like, some sort of monster. And, like, when I don't know, whenever I think of, like, Halloween in my head, I always think of, like, this sort of, I don't want to say cheesy, but, you know, there's, like, this, like, monster that comes and, like, kills people. And then it's always kind of just, like, gruesome. And that's what's, like, terrifying about it. And in this movie, it's literally that, but just turned up to level 10. Because there is this element of a monster, which is this whole family. And there's all these really strange, weird creatures and people and all these, like, terrifying lores, you know, all these devil chants and all this stuff that's going on. It's just horrific and terrifying. And, you know, it will get you one way or another. And I think that's why this is such a perfect Halloween movie. It's such a perfect horror movie in that sense, that no matter how many times you watch this, no matter who you show this to, there's going to, I think, be something that's going to, someone's going to take away from this movie. And that's why I like it. As a horror fan, as a horror movie, it does everything that I look forward to in a horror movie.
There's a lot of aspects of this movie that I can go over, and we've gone on over for the past hour. More than anything, I respect it as a piece from someone who is unabashedly being themselves. And I have nothing but respect for that. I also have respect for it being by someone who just fucking loves horror and wants to make this sadistic family, had this idea and created it as this little chunk of rotted pie that you can just dip into every Halloween. And I love that, whether it be from the beginning scenes with Dr. Wolfenstein to that first interaction with Captain Spaulding, to the Fireflies, to the Fishman, to everything that's just insane in this film. I love it. What happens after this film is its own thing, and I still haven't seen Three from Hell, but I'll probably give it a watch. But I absolutely love this movie.
Yeah, and you know, a good question, actually. So, you know, obviously, as movies and everything has ramped up, do you feel like, I was surprised at the fact that even though maybe some of the kills and stuff look a little bit cheesy now, the movie still, that madness that carries the movie is still very much maintain and felt. Because, you know, obviously as we see more and more extreme things on the big screen, we almost become, you know, more and more desensitized to sort of like this older terror, you know what I mean, like the older that looks like cheesy. Like, I think we talked about it last time.
I'm straight up broken at this point with my sensitivity.
Yeah, so, you know, when I see the original Saw nowadays, I'm like, okay, like, you know, he's sawing his leg through. And I remember the first time thinking about all that, how horrifying it was, but like now I'm just like, hurry up, just do it, stop being a pussy. But with this movie, both the horror elements of, like, you know, people dying in the way they are, and also just the mayhem, like, I think it still holds up. And that's why I think this movie, in a weird way, is always going to be a horror classic to a degree. You know, it's just going to be like a movie that I think if you're a horror fan and you haven't seen it, you're going to just fall in love with it.
Which is funny, because I know that Rob Zombie is, at this point, he's disassociated himself with the movie.
Which is so odd.
I mean, I get it. I understand to a degree, as it's just, I look at it like whenever I draw something, I think it's trash. But when I do make something, it is trash. But whenever you make something and you write something, or you put your heart into something, you're gonna hate it more than anything.
Yeah, it's like the unsatisfied artist.
And I feel like that's, whether it be him wanting to feel that he moved on at this point, since as a director, which, due to where he kind of has.
Yeah.
I do also think it's a shame that he's discredited. He thinks it's just flaw upon flaw upon flaw, to directly quote him. But for the rest of us, it's a film that we can enjoy. And it's a film we can watch every Halloween. And it's a film we can watch and enjoy this Halloween.
Yep.
So, Alonzo, thank you for joining me for this week's Halloween Horror Month.
And while this week we were dealing with madness and a house of madness and a house of horror, we are going to be dipping into a film that I have been wanting to do for a long time, ever since we've been doing this, these podcasts, but we've never gotten the chance to do it. We are going to be going into another house of madness. We're going to be moving on over to the Overlook Hotel with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining next week. So, for those of you who have not seen The Shining, do yourself a favor. Go watch it and be ready to join us next week. And if you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. If you also want to literally hear more from us and hear more of our podcasts, you can follow us and give us a little like and a subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Podomatic, and finally, Spotify. Until next week, Alonzo, thank you for joining me.
As always.
And for everything important, newsworthy, and pretty much geek, we'll have it covered all under our radar. Catch you guys next week.